You could have been a supporter of any football team. You could have been, you could have been, you could have been. You could have been following the champions of the Champions League. You could have been, you could have been, you could have been. What's all this stuff you're giving us? There's just one team for me, and that's the town where I come from. In Bromley, in Bromley, in Bromley.
Hello everyone and welcome to Ravens Weekly. I can't do it, Matt, it's your thing.
Shall I step in?
Yeah, do it properly.
Hello everyone and welcome back to Ravens Weekly. That there was the voice of Josh Tindall joining me today on Ravens Weekly. My name is Matt Hall. It's great to be back with you and thank you for your continued support of the relaunch of this podcast. It's always a pleasure, Josh. It's the highlight of the week, isn't it?
Oh yeah, I count down the minutes.
Oh, we absolutely love it, and we're glad that people are enjoying listening to us as well. It makes it all that little bit better, and that's exactly why we do it in the first place. So, coming up on today's show, we've got plenty of special features for you, plenty of guests, and some unexpected ones.
We should have music over the top of that.
We should do.
Coming up on this show, and then
it's like a contents page, yeah, but spoken. Anyway, we've got some unexpected guests, haven't we, as well? And we'll talk a bit more about those in a minute. But to get us started off, obviously, we were with you last week. We didn't have a game on the Saturday. However, we had Jude Arthurs and Byron Webster committing their future to the football club by signing a new contract, which was very, very well received across social media. And of course, Andy Woodman, delighted, as is everyone at the club, that those two will be staying with us. You can hear from Jude and Byron directly by listening to last week's episode of Ravens Weekly, and it's well worth a listen, isn't it, Josh?
It is indeed.
We've got some good news for former players and two players that are loved, Jack Holland and Luke Coulson. And not only that, both of them are still very much involved here at the football club. Luke Coulson as an academy coach and teacher, and Jack Holland as head of athletic performance with the first team. They were both named in the National League South Team of the Week.
We need to get them. We need to get them on the podcast.
We need to get them both at the same time on the podcast. Can you imagine that?
They're always up for it. They always come in this room. They see the setup and they're like, yeah. Jack Holland, he actually put his name forward to be a co-host.
Did he?
He did.
We could have like a three of us doing it podcast. Absolutely brilliant. Well, I'm sure that will go down well with the listeners, Jack being a Bromley legend. So anyway, great for those
two. I think
he
should just host the whole thing.
What, me and you should just... step aside. Get out the door.
Yeah.
Okay. We'll have to see how it goes.
Jack Holland's Ravens Weekly.
It does have a ring to it, to be fair. It does have a ring to it. But anyway, we're here for this episode, at the very least. Let's talk about Bromley Women before we move on to anything else. They made it six games unbeaten with a brilliant 3-1 win over Eastbourne United. And Josh, for those that haven't seen the goals, they were something special, each and every one of them.
If you haven't seen the goals... at Bromley FC Women on Twitter, Instagram, whatever. Get on it and watch those goals because they are brilliant.
So it's Sylvia Safranovic.
She's on fire.
Is in great form, isn't she?
Yes.
Absolutely brilliant addition to the team. And she scored a stunner that nestled in the top corner. A really, really good goal. Tanya Holly as well. One of the longer-term players had a brilliant lob over the goalkeeper after a brilliant ball from Beth Hull. And then the experienced centre-forward, Charlotte Lee, rounded off the scoring with a really good finish, playing with the defenders in the box and then firing it into the bottom corner. So absolutely fantastic, Josh, so to see them doing so well.
So good. I mean, I know how much it means to them. And yeah, I mean, they won the league last season before as well, and they're just going from strength to strength. And I know Dave Poynton, who's on the coaching staff at Bromley FC Women, he always sends me updates for the programme and whatever, and he's full of compliments to his team, and he has been ever since he started sending me the updates over a year and a half ago. And yeah, he can't say a bad word. He hasn't got a bad word to say about anyone.
Well, it's absolutely brilliant to see them doing so well, like I say, and looking forward to keeping tabs on their continued progress, and best of luck to them. Sunday was also a year to the day since we beat Solihull Moors 3-1 in the FA Trophy quarter-final. On that day, little did we know what drama and what emotion would follow.
Oh, it was a brilliant day. I mean, when I sort of found out that there was a year to the day, obviously time's gone so quick, but it just sort of brings back that whole, the whole memory of it, and especially building up to this Wrexham game tomorrow. Is we were sat at Dover, and little did we think that, yeah, we'd be getting to the quarterfinals, let alone the final, and winning the whole thing.
Well, it's funny, isn't it, how that Solihull game mirrors the semi-final against York City.
I know.
With the way the goals went in, and the goal scorers as well. Yeah. Going 1-0 down, yeah, inside 2 minutes, and then coming back to win 3-1. Yeah. Michael Cheek, of course, heavily involved. Brilliant days all round, both of them. And then leading into that final was really something special. And, of course, the final being against Wrexham, we've got a few anecdotes to that later on in the podcast. And you'll be able to hear those if you carry on listening and stick with us. Hopefully people aren't tuning out yet, Josh. I think we're doing all right here. We'll let them be the judge of that. Anyway, there was some brilliant news. It's fair to say, Josh, that Ryan Sturck has come into Bromley Football Club and made quite the impression.
Yeah, well, he won Player of the Month for February, and I have the pleasure of counting up all the votes. So, I can sort of see how much players win by and whatever. And he was up there. I know Kellen was up there again, and Omar. There was a lot of players going for it, but Ryan Sturck got it, and it was deserved. And I remember when he came into the office and I told him, he was quite surprised. I know he signed midway through the month, and then he missed a game, and he was surprised that he got it. But every time he's played, he's just been unbelievable.
And every time a tweet or something goes out about him, you just get Mansfield Town fans replying, saying how good he is and how pleased they are to see him do well, which is great, isn't it?
It is, yeah, and Birmingham as well. It's brilliant, and it's one of those players that I think when you're playing for teams like Birmingham City and you come round and you see what we have to offer at Bromley and that sort of persuades them to join us, and they back Andy and they know what the club's about. And yeah, it's brilliant to have players like Ryan on board.
Anyway, moving back on to fixture news. We mentioned at the start of this podcast that there was no game for Bromley last Saturday. There was due to be a game on the Tuesday away to FC Halifax Town. That was called off on Monday night. Yes, not for the first time, due to a waterlogged pitch.
At least we weren't in the ground.
100%. At least it wasn't 2:15 or 45 minutes before kickoff when we found it out without any prior warning, because the weather up north, it's fair to say, in the past week has been absolutely shocking, hasn't it? So it wasn't really a great surprise. But of course, that fixture will be rearranged, and we'll hopefully be able to confirm a date for the rearranged fixture early next week. Something new for you on the podcast now, and something quite special, actually. I think we're delighted to be joined by Mark of Blue Security, partners of the football club, and have been so for a number of years. Mark, welcome to Ravens Weekly. How do you feel to be sat in here amongst us?
Yeah, no, it feels great. It'd be good to put my point across and tell you everything about my journey with the club, which has been for a good few years now. So, yeah, no, looking forward to it. It should be good.
Well, it's a brilliant conversation, and we've just had it kind of off air, if you like, and I've learned things that I didn't know before. But it's been a brilliant partnership between Blue Security and the club. We'll get onto that in a second. But do you want to start just by telling us about your company and about Blue Security?
Yeah, so I came out of school with not a huge amount of qualifications, to say the least, and fell straight into working for my parents' security company. That went well. It was a big company, done extremely well. But kids and parents working together, maybe not the best mix, to be honest. And it got to the stage where we could no longer work together. I decided that I needed to find my own path, which is what I did. So 15 years ago, or just over 15 years ago, Blue Security was formed. I've never known anything else. I've only ever worked in the security industry, and at 53 years old now, you know, that's a lot of time, and that's a lot of people you meet, and a lot of stuff that goes on. So it's been a journey for me personally. Blue Security started out mainly just subcontracting off of bigger security companies. Me as a one-man band, but over the years, that's slowly grown. I've committed the ultimate foe in the fact that I've now employed both of my children. But I think I know the pitfalls, and hopefully we have a better working relationship than I did with my parents.
So the title security is quite broad, isn't it? What for you, what does that word mean, and what is it that you provide?
So we provide everything from intruder alarm, CCTV, gates and barrier automation, fire alarms, the whole spectrum, other than sort of security guards. Although being quite a big bloke, I am asked to do that on a few occasions. But no, that it's everything to do with electronic security. And that can be from design all the way through to installation, maintenance. The whole spectrum, really.
And it is quite wide-ranging, as we just said. Is that something you enjoy about the job?
It is. Over my many years, I've gone through different sort of departments, if you like, within that industry. So when I left my parents' company, it was when gate automation was really taking off in the UK. And that was the part that I sort of drove. And that has always been a bit of a passion for me. Driving around and seeing your gates on the front of people's properties is, you know, you can see that you've done something. You can see that you're actually manufacturing something, and it's there for forever, hopefully. The technology is massively changing. As an old dinosaur, I struggle with that a little bit, but that's where the younger lads come in, and they can, you know, they can teach me in the right way of going about it.
You've got a brilliant team of staff, and we see them down here quite a lot. And I have to say that, you know, you talk about the connection with your family and the security element, and now your children working for the company as well. It does have that family feel to it. Even as an outsider, I can see that.
It does, and I think, you know, that's something that's always been drummed into me from a very young age. You can go to a larger security company, but you're just a contract number. We've never been like that. Every single one of my clients knows me personally. They know my staff personally. And I think that really reflects on how close we can be and how we can give you that working environment that people like, especially with security as well. Because at the end of the day, it's about protecting stuff that you've worked your whole life for. You don't just want to pick someone out of the yellow pages. We don't really do any advertising other than what we have at Bromley, and obviously the vans being Sime Wrighton. 95% of our work comes from recommendation, you know, and I think that sort of talks for itself, really, to be honest. People do like that commitment of us being a small family-run business that can offer you the service, and they feel the trust of us working for them.
Well, we've 100% witnessed that firsthand here at the football club. So let us get on to that now. You just said that you're coming up to a bit of an anniversary in terms of your involvement with the club.
We are indeed. So next season will be our 10th year anniversary of sponsoring Bromley. We went from a little signboard on the back fence and a couple of season tickets, which was, you know, at the time I was thinking, what am I doing? Why am I doing this? Why am I doing this? We've just signed a deal for the next two seasons to become back of the shirt sponsor, still with all our branding around the stadium. So I think, you know, we've multiplied tenfold on what we spend and what we invest in the club. For me, it's been a real, real personal journey, not just sponsoring the club and the work we do with the club, but meeting the family of Bromley, everybody at Bromley FC, from the chairman down to the kit man. I know everybody here. It's great. I come along on a Saturday and I just feel that I'm part of the system, not someone that's just sponsoring the club. And that's an amazing feeling to have.
We'll talk a bit more about that and how you've grown to become a real part of the furniture here in a minute. But you actually did come down to Bromley quite a while before you got involved officially.
Yeah, I did. So probably going back 15, 16 years ago, I went through a little spell of coming down. I've always been a bit of an Arsenal fan, to be fair. But again, going back to my parents, my dad was a massive Arsenal fan and used to take me literally every home game, lots of away games. And I fell out of love with football for quite a while, to be honest. But then coming to Bromley back then, 15, 16 years ago, you know, being able to stand on the touchline then with a pint of beer and watch them run around, it was just great. And that was it. That was the start of falling in love. And it's... it's one of my biggest bugbears is when people say to me, what football team do you support? And I'm 100% Bromley FC. But then they turn around and say, well, who's your real team? And I'm like, Bromley is my real team. It is my first team.
I think that's starting to change now, isn't it, a little bit? People are becoming more aware of this football club.
Without a doubt. And I think, you know, that has to be put on what Robin's done as the chairman and owner. How he has turned this club round over the last couple of years is phenomenal. The investment in the facilities and the infrastructure. If no one's ever had the opportunity to do a tour of the South Stand, I absolutely recommend that you come down and have a look around, because when you stand out on that pitch on the touchline and you look at the South Stand, it just looks like a block of seats. But to see what's actually inside there and what's been built and achieved is just phenomenal. It really is.
And you know it like the back of your hand here, primarily because you've done a lot of work. So it's not just the sponsor element. You really are a partner in the sense that you've carried out a lot of work here, particularly in the South Stand in recent years. Do you want to tell us a little bit about that?
When the South Stand was constructed, it was just an empty void inside. And then the idea was to bring in the academy and have half as the stand as a school, if you like, with six rooms, changing rooms and so on. So it would link up with Ravensbourne School. The rest of the stand became part of Bromley's hub, if you like. So I can remember in Jerry and Julia's day them working out of a porter cabin over by the Ravens Bar. Now there's office suites, a boardroom, where we are today, a green room, recording studio. There's everything. The gym, ice baths. It's mad, absolutely mad. And from our point of view, you know, we've installed fire alarm throughout the building. Bromley as a club now has currently got about 120 cameras across the whole stadium, and talk of more. Most of the doors are secured with a fob system, intruder alarm. So yeah, our package was huge. Our package was huge to cover this stand and the stadium.
And obviously that makes a huge difference to match day security as well, doesn't it, with the team who are responsible for keeping everyone safe, you know, having access to these fantastic cameras and units that are in place.
Yeah, 100%. So part of the brief was to build a little security room. So there's multiple monitors in there on match days. That room then gets handing over from Bromley's in-house security to the Met. Bromley Police will be in there. They will take control of the cameras, a lot of them being PTZ, movable cameras. There's one on the South Stand particularly. If you zoom that camera all the way in, you could literally read a message on someone's telephone on the North Stand at the far end. You know, technology's moved on massively over the last few years, and companies and football clubs, they're all embracing it, and it's not something that people look at now thinking, oh, I have that because it's an extra, it's something nice. It's now a necessity, not just from a security point of view, but from a health and safety point of view as well. So, you know, Bromley can look after all their fans that are within the stadium.
And you've got quite a unique perspective on this, because you've kind of seen the club grow, and you talk about the investment in the facilities. You've seen it over the years, but you've also been involved in that procedure as well.
Yeah, definitely. And I think that's what puts me in a really good position. And obviously, you know, nice to be able to explain it now. You know, as I say, when I came here 15, 16 years ago, it was like a Sunday league club. Now, it's, I don't know, League Two, League One. You know, even the way that Robin has pushed things forward, everything's done to the same sort of level you would get in a championship club. I still go to Palace, I still go to Arsenal. I think we've got better facilities here than they've got at Selhurst Park, to be honest. You know, it's that much has got into the investment and the structure of the club.
Let's talk a bit about your passion for the club now then, which you've alluded to previously, but you've mentioned, you know, how that element of you supporting Bromley has grown over the years, and as you become more and more involved, you become more invested. And I referred to it earlier, you're a part of the furniture here. You're at every home match. And it's always great to see you. And you're actually part of a sponsors table in the Exec Lounge, aren't you? Do you want to tell us a little bit about that?
We are indeed. So we put our package together on what we wanted to do for our sponsorship. And then Robin came to me personally and had this idea of setting up a sponsors table. There's two dedicated tables that are used up in the Exec Club. One is run by George Wakelin, the former manager, which is known as the Legends Table, which George will invite ex-players and managers. Really, really good banter on that table. Fantastic group of guys that come down. The second table that Robin approached me about was to have it purely as a sponsors table, and I host it. And the idea is the smaller sponsors, not necessarily the partners, will have the opportunity to sit in the Exec Club, have a two-course meal, sit in the director's box and watch the game from that perspective. Hopefully they will enjoy it, and they will then speak to Lucy or one of the other staff about booking a table so they can bring their staff and friends along and experience that side of the club.
Well, it's brilliant, isn't it? And now let's talk more about your journey as a fan. You've really become very invested in watching the team, as I've mentioned. And what's been your favourite memory as a Bromley supporter?
Oh, there's so many, to be fair. I think going to Wembley for the FA Trophy the first time round, going on a bus, it was just, it was amazing. Although the result wasn't the best, it was a fantastic day out. And then when we achieved it the second time and beating Wrexham was just, I can't put that into words. All I can say is I was very fortunate to get invited to the after party afterwards. I've never had a hangover like I did on that Monday. But what a celebration. What an achievement for the club.
What a special moment. And it really shows how far. We've talked about off the pitch quite a lot in this interview. The club's come very far on it as well.
Without a doubt. I think, you know, the group of guys that are there at the moment, they gel very well. So, so pleased to see that Byron Webster has renewed his contract. I think he's an excellent captain. Vocally, just the way he guides the other players. You know, we are quite a young team. There's a lot of youth out there. But, you know, you look at the likes of Kellen Fisher, they're just fantastic players. Harry Forster, you know, that man hasn't got legs. He's got mechanical machines. I've never, ever seen anybody run as fast as that lad does. But yeah, the team looks great. The team really looks great. It's just the whole scenario with getting out of the National League is very difficult, as everybody probably knows. There's only one automatic promotion and one playoff promotion. And to go from National League to League Two is such a massive jump. But it's such a narrow, filtered environment at the top to get up there. I think if it was made a bit more fair, and maybe, you know, 3-4 clubs were in the promotion spot, we would have been up years ago.
And it's becoming a bit of a cliche now. What we say is the business end of the season, and the games that are coming up, you've watched all of them. The games that are coming up are vital, aren't they? And that all starts with the visit of Wrexham tomorrow afternoon.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to that. I'll probably watch most of the game with my head in my hands, to be totally honest. It's going to be interesting. As I say, everybody in this league, there is no bad teams. Everybody has a chance. Wrexham are absolutely flying. The points difference is just immense between them and ourselves. But you never know, you know. You never know. We'll see what happens.
We said that before Wembley, didn't we? We had a bit of a difficult run in the league. Wrexham were in good form. And then look what happened that day.
Exactly. You know, I think the fans are going to be immense tomorrow. It's going to be a sellout crowd. There's going to be a lot of people here. I think once the fans get behind our players, you can see it improves the way they play. They thrive on it. And I know, speaking to Andy Woodman, he loves that. He loves the fact that the fans get behind the players. Just motivation will push them. And hopefully, fingers crossed, we'll get that result.
Absolutely. And then after that, it's a countdown to the end of the season. It seems to have flown by.
It does, yeah. I think there's only what, 3 home games left, I think, now. Yeah, amazing. It's just, it's gone so quickly. I think everything since we came out of COVID now, and being an old'un now, time just goes so quickly. It really does. But, you know, I'm not sure whether we'll make a playoff position. I think we're certainly, you know, finishing in a half-decent position, and look forward to going again next season.
Well, Mark, have you enjoyed being on the podcast today?
I have indeed. It's been great, yeah. I was a bit nervous to start with, but no, I think it's yeah, it's been great, and it's been really nice for everybody to hear my journey and my involvement with the club, which, as I say, I absolutely love. And I put it to anyone out there, you know, if you want to promote your business in Bromley, come down to Bromley Football Club, have a chat with one of the sponsor managers down here, and yeah, see what you can do. It's an absolutely fantastic place to be, and come and be part of the Bromley FC family.
Well, it really is, Mark. And just before we finish, how can people get in touch with yourself if they're interested in any of your services?
I've got one or two boards around the football club, as people will see. But just, yeah, Google Blue Security Systems, we'll come straight up.
Well, Mark, thank you so much for joining us on Ravens Weekly today. It's been great to have you on, and we'll have to have you back on at some point.
Lovely. Thanks very much, Matt. Appreciate it.
Matt, I think it's time.
Time for what?
I think you know what.
Oh, you mean Community Corner? That's what you meant, right?
That is what I meant.
That is what you meant. Okay, well, it's been another busy week for the Community Trust.
Oh my God.
So many participants across the past couple of weeks. A huge shout out to Andrea Ellis, who is our Women and Girls Development Officer, and made a fantastic week of International Women's Week. We had a record number of girls participants, actually a record number of participants across the board, but it was all about the Women and Girls provisions last week, and we celebrated that at the match against York City with the Her Game 2. And the little march around the pitch of our women and girls attendees and participants and players. And it was wonderful to see such a great level of respect be shown. Congratulations to Andrea for orchestrating all of that. We've been in schools, we've been everywhere. But one of the things, Josh, that everyone around this football club will have noticed is that we've had two rather large schools tournaments going on here. And one of those was a tournament for Bromley Primary Schools, and that was on the day of the York City fixture, the 7th of March. And we had 340 children from primary schools in Bromley take part in that. And the two winning teams, which was Harris Beckenham for the girls and Crofton Juniors for the boys, made their way into the regional finals. Now, this is quite a prestigious competition. It's the National League Under-11s Cup. The prize at the end of it, if you get through all of the rounds, is to play the final at the playoff final game in the National League. So previously, whatever stadium it's been played at, we had a team a few years back who nearly got to go and play in front of the crowd at Wembley. Unfortunately, they lost out at the last minute. This time, we are delighted that Harris Beckenham, the girls' team, have made it through to the South Final. It was a really hotly contested tournament on the pitch yesterday here at Hayes Lane. We had schools from across the southeast of England, from as close as Welling and as far as the likes of Eastbourne and Aldershot. And it was wonderful to see. We had a couple of players that went up to say hello. We had a lot of compliments on our running of the tournament and the facilities and things going on here at Hayes Lane. Unfortunately, Crofton didn't make it through the boys' tournament, though they put in a fantastic shift and they should be very proud of themselves. But it was brilliant to see Harris Beckenham go into the South Final, which will be held in April at Slough Town. So congratulations to them. Also congratulations to Woking for winning the boys' tournament. The schools, what's really nice about this is the schools are able to represent their local clubs, and it's brilliant that Bromley Football Club are going to have representation in the South Finals.
It looked really good, and it, yeah, really busy out there as well. And I think I recognised a familiar face out there as well, Matt.
There was a familiar face, and that was Scott Wagstaff, who, of course, played here last season. An absolutely fantastic footballer. He's had a brilliant career. He's still playing. He's playing for Tunbridge Angels now. And he was involved with bringing their team and coaching their team on the day. So it was brilliant to see Scott and catch up with him. And he was chatting to a few of the players and the staff, which was really lovely to
see. That's good, because when we went for a school visit last season with Scott, he was on about coaching kids, and he was sort of inspired by what the community trust does with the soccer schools and the school visits and whatever. And yeah, he was very passionate about coaching kids, and yeah, good to see.
Yeah, it was absolutely brilliant. Like you say, during that visit, I feel like we might have a little part to play in Scott Wagstaff's next chapter. But what a brilliant coach, and what a brilliant person to be able to look up to as a young kid, and to have coaching you. You know, someone who's played so many times in the football league and has just had a brilliant footballing career. So, yes, all the best to Scott. It was really lovely to see him. He's an absolute top man.
Speaking of young players, let's move on to our academy.
Slightly older, but still slightly young players. Yeah,
true. You know what I meant.
We had some visits from overseas, Josh, didn't we? In fact, some visits from across the pond, as they say.
We did. We do speak to the girls' coach, Harry Honor, in a bit, who will describe what's happened. But in the past couple of weeks, they've arranged friendlies with two American teams who have come over. And, yeah, it's been interesting. I've gone out a couple of times and taken a few photos, and yeah, it's very interesting.
It is, and we've actually had American teams come over to Hayes Lane in the past few years, actually, both boys and girls teams to play, and it's absolutely brilliant to see us getting that kind of exposure. And obviously these teams are wanting to come and play at Hayes Lane, which is credit to Bromley Football Club. But the expert, as you've alluded to there, Josh, is Harry Honor. He's head of girls here at Bromley Football Club and the Bromley Football Club Academy. And we had the pleasure of catching up, didn't we?
We did.
Harry Honor, give us a summary of your role at Bromley FC.
So my role consists of being head of girls. So under sort of my umbrella, I suppose you could call it, is the under 21s Academy girls. So both our teams within that, which is our Premier and Championship squads. But alongside that is our JPL set up as well. So our youth academy, with our under 14s and under 16s. So basically my role is just to sort of look after those and make sure everything there is smooth and progressing and always developing, but also in general, in terms of what we offer at the club with our women's pathways, just to help and aid anything that I can possible, and you know, what we can put on to help us progress and improve as we look to continue growing, really. So yeah, anything to do with the girls, mainly I sort of slot into somewhere, but also just making sure that, you know, every year we are improving and we're looking to just get better.
And how did you first start working at the club?
So it was during COVID, and I had a call, I had a message from a guy called Matt Griffiths, who used to work here a little while ago, saying that Matt Hall himself needed some coaches for the summer camps, and did I want to get involved? And it was something I've done before, with another company, and I was really keen to try and get my foot in a door at a football club and also help out, you know, locally with Bromley as a club, you know, it was close and I always wanted to try and get involved with. Matt introduced me to Matt and come down and yeah, I think we've done a few soccer camps together, ended up heading up a few of those, and then eventually got myself a conversation. I spoke to Mark and he mentioned about the women's setup here. And they wanted another coach for that, and it just sort of grew into what it is now, really. But big thanks to Matt for getting me in.
Well, Matt is sat here, so you've just given him a shout out. So
very,
Matt,
very proud.
How was Harry as a coach?
Harry was brilliant. Harry made things work that we never thought were possible. We had limited space on occasions, and Harry was always an expert at utilising the little space that we had to put brilliant sessions on. So I'm not surprised that Harry's really progressed with his coaching. And yeah, we're really pleased for him over here in Community Corner.
Have you always wanted to be a coach?
Yeah, I think I didn't get into football till late, so I didn't really understand why it was. I never really found it too interesting until about the age of 12. Realised that by the age of 12, I think the dream of ever playing high is going to be over because of the years I missed out on. So at the age of 15, started coaching around where I used to live with my dad, down around Thamesmead with Teviot Rangers, and then sort of just progressed from there and found myself enjoying it more and more. Started taking up teams instead of, you know, through community and teams, and yeah, just started to come into the enjoying the managing side of it as well, but then also the organisation all side with it, with the head of girls. I think it's been a nice blend of loads of different roles over the past years, and yeah, still enjoying it now.
So you moved from the community trust to the academy. How are you finding life in the academy?
I love it. Brilliant. It is a lot at times. It is, you don't realise how full-on full-time football is, But it's amazing. I think I joined, you know, when I joined during COVID and we didn't have the facilities that we have now, to see the club progress from, you know, we used to work out the porter cabins, but to now be in the building, have access to what we have access to. So even the media room, the analysis room, the classrooms, the gym, more access on the pitch and stuff like that is amazing. So for everything that a coach needs is right here. So in terms of coaching, is amazing. And to see the progression, you know, and the growth of the girls' side here has been great over 3 years as well.
And it's been a unique past couple of weeks for your girls' teams because they've played two games against American teams. Can you tell us a bit about that?
Yeah, so it was something, one I arranged a little while ago and one was sort of sprung on the blue, out of the blue with us. But we had a chat with, well, I got in touch with a guy from, who was a sort of a organisation, he's a guy that organises tours for teams in America. So we got two lined up, which was for under 19s and our under 14s. And the first one to come over was Darlington School. And they were from, I think they're from Georgia area. And they were, it was a real good, it was the first time we've ever done it here, I think, you know, especially since I've been here. And it was a great experience to sort of talk to those guys and see what it is like in the States. Obviously, I think in the States, the progression of women's football has always been slightly ahead of us anyway. So to sort of understand their college system, see what the girls are like over there, speak to some of the coaches was really good. And we managed to get both girls' teams, our championship and our premiership squads, a run out against those to give them the experience of what it was to play like. And then literally within, I think that was on the Monday, and by the Friday I had another email saying, oh, we've got another game arranged for you on the Tuesday, and that was against Presbyterian College, which is a D1 college in South Carolina, I believe. And so they were, and they, again, another step up for what we've ever experienced. Really good setup, great coaches, great players. It was nice to chat with the parents as well. And we gave both girls the sort of chance to play against those. So for us, it was great to be able to sort of put that on and you know, show, sort of hopefully spread our name within that sort of tour, that sort of tour arena, so that we can get more games like this on and we can get other teams and experience games, because, you know, they're going to, like, they've gone to train at City, at Chelsea, at Tottenham, they're going to play Rangers, they're going to games, and you sort of go, how amazing is their experience, and for us to be part of that, and they appreciate coming here, they talk about what here was like, so hopefully our name grows within that and it's something we can add to a bit more going on.
And some of the academy girls have progressed on to playing for Bromley Women, and the progression is really good. How proud are you to be part of their development?
Oh, mega. I think in the last 2 years, I think it's been amazing, especially since, you know, we've added in the JPL. The women's team is becoming a bit more apparent at the club, definitely, for sure. And how we link the youth and the academy and the first team together is becoming a lot better and a lot stronger. So to have Chris, Katie, Abby, and Charlotte go up this year was a really good, you know, sign for us to go, look, this is the first step of us doing that. For sure, I think this season there'll be more. At the end of this season, there'll be a few more to add to that list. But not just up there. We've had, you know, girls coming from our youth setup, so our Kent League setup, coming into the JPL. We've had girls making good steps from our JPL into our older age groups, and then from the Kent and the JPL coming to the academy. So I think we should be really proud, and all the coaches, we're really happy in terms of the connection that we're creating through the pathway. And we hope that obviously next year we can show more of these guys in the first team, and then hopefully playing for the club for a long, long time. So yeah, really happy.
You talk about linking it all together, and the place where it starts for a lot of them now is the new Wildcat centres that we've got from the age of four upwards. It's important to get them in at an early age and make that their bread and butter, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah. I mean, last year I used to sit and watch the sessions when they first started to come in last year, and to see the numbers increase to what they are now, I think is massive. And for us, we're talking, as we talk about next year already, I think our big sort of target area is to go, well, actually, how many of these girls within the girls' camps and the Wildcat sessions can we bring into the club, whether that's for the youth or they're ready for JPL, but how can we start to think about getting them into the system so that we can progress them even further, and make, you know, hopefully with the idea of potentially getting them into the academy in the first team, you know, many years later. And so, like, the community and Andrea have been brilliant in putting on this extra, you know, these extra sort of community things to do. Like yesterday, they had the tournament outside. Loads of girls from loads of different places coming down. And even just being here, I think people aren't aware of what was available to the girls here. And they come down and they go, wow, there's actually quite a lot. How do we be more part of this? How can we get involved more? And to be around the club, I think people are actually really interested now. So keeping hold of those is key. And what the guys are doing on the community side has been fantastic.
One of the key things about the academy, we've talked a lot about the football element of it, is actually the educational element. And it's brilliant, isn't it, for these girls and the boys as well to be able to combine their footballing passion with, you know, the very important aspect of getting their education.
Yeah, it always comes first, doesn't it? I think at a young age, you know, you can't underestimate the importance of education. It's such a tough industry to get into, football as a whole, so you've got to have that education with it. But I think what's even nicer is that they get to experience within their education, they experience lots of different avenues within football or within sport itself. So they're not just focusing on football, they focus on you know, different avenues as coaching, refereeing, they can look at media, they can look at all these different areas that they might not be aware of that existed for them. So I think the education also provides a good experience into what else could be out there for them, and give them a, you know, a lot more interest in terms of different areas within football. But saying that, like coming over here now and having them working closer with us instead of at the school has been really good, because now we can work with the teachers closely, especially on the boys' side. It's been great because the boys, certain younger boys now have had chances to move up and work with the older age groups, and their progression is developing because we now work with the teachers, which means we can sort of go, is there any chance they could maybe come out and do their lesson a little bit later? I think as the girls sort of grows, at the moment they're all in one class, but as it starts to go to two, it's great for us to be able to go, you know, especially you can use it as a behaviour tool as well. You know, they're not performing in the classroom, then they can't play football. You know, they might be really excelling at football, we want to push them, how do we marry up their education? So I think it all goes hand in hand, and it's nice for the teachers to see how their students get on the pitch as well. The teachers have a better connection with the coaches and the kids, and the teachers start to see them out on the pitch as well, so we get a better view of what they are like, instead of, you know, they have one personality over the other side and one person here. We start to see what they are like as a whole, really, I think.
Well, it's definitely growing, like you say, year on year, isn't it? So what would you say to a parent or indeed a child who's heading towards their GCSEs and considering their options for next year? Why should they consider the Bromley Football Club Academy?
I think what it has to offer, especially, so, you know, in terms of the educational side, what they can get out of it, there's a loads of different now education pathways for them to do. There's the HND, HNC, they can start to get things like a foundation degree here. They don't just walk out with BTECs and stuff. They've got the A-level option, there's now business options. So what's on offer is going to be amazing to them. To be in and around a first team environment or, you know, a football club environment is massive. The facilities that are on offer, if you're looking at football, I think it's great to tie your education and being able to play football together. You know, even, and the amount of football that you get alongside your education, I think is key. Like, we excel our football sort of practice every day. We get 2 hours every day plus a game day on Wednesday, so they get loads of football plus their education. And I just think the way the club's going is a great option to have, and it allows you to move on to university. It could allow you to move on to working within the football club, you know, like myself or Ronan. You know, these guys have come through the pathway and gone to work on, you know, come to work at the football club, but in different avenues. We've got James, Joel and
Connor,
yeah. All the same are coming through, and now they're working at the academy. So the options that it provides you after us, I think even there is great, and something that people should consider a lot more, and especially for girls. It's becoming more, I think it's becoming more accessible, stuff like this, what we offer. But because we've got the foundations in place from quite a few years ago, I think we're up there in terms of, especially when where places where we travel, facility-wise, we're up there with the best. You know, we provide, everyone comes in and goes, wow, you've got unreal facilities here. So what, in terms of the girls offer, there's going to be stuff like this, but it's all going to be brand new, whereas we're sort of more established. And I just think if we can get the word out consistently, and as women's football becomes a career path for females, stuff like us will grow, and what we offer it will grow, and hopefully we continue to get more numbers. So it's definitely something to consider, I would say.
Well, it's a unique offering, isn't it? It's fantastic. And had I been any good at football at that age, I would have loved an opportunity like that. Moving back onto you then, Harry, finally, you've been here for a few years now. You're really progressing really well. You seem to be really enjoying yourself in what you're doing as well. What are your aspirations for your coaching development and career?
I think for me, I like the role that I'm in now. So it'd just be to continue to see where we can grow with as a pathway, as a girls' pathway. But personally, I think I'd like to continue with my coaching badges, get as many experiences as I can. I really like the idea of the America, the America teams coming over to gain experience, to talk. I'd like to, potentially think about doing things like that in terms of just gaining more experiences within different environments. I think just keep applying what we're doing already, like what I'm doing already, develop as best I can as a coach, learn a little bit more in terms of how to, work with organisation in terms of, like, now we've got a whole pathway, how do we link that, all the sort of details that come with it, I suppose, or how do you organise things and I don't know the word I'm after, but I can't think of it. What's the word, Matt? You're organising and then it's like, not minute details. I've lost the word. Anyway, I think learning more about how to, get the best out of this pathway and how we organise that so that we continue to push girls through the first team or develop people that work at the club or professionals within it, work on myself and just give myself as, many different experiences within coaching, I think, as I can. So different age groups, working in and around the first team, maybe, with the ladies' first team would be good. But I also enjoy working with the community guys and the younger age groups.
Harry, it's been brilliant having you on the podcast. Hopefully you've enjoyed it.
Loved it. Brilliant.
We'll have to get you back on soon. He's definitely done this before, hasn't he? Yes. Definitely done this before. He's a
natural.
Thanks so much,
Cheers,
Harry.
Guys.
And great to hear from you.
Thank you.
Continuing the theme of young players, Josh, on to the under-23s.
Yeah, the under-23s are playing tonight, if you're listening on Friday. They're at home to Beaconsfield Town at 7:45. They'll be hoping to return to winning ways after losing 3-2 to Welling on Saturday. I think, obviously, that they were on a bit of a title charge, especially after last season, narrowly missing out to Woking, I think it was, last season. And, I think it's sort of slipping out of reach at the minute, but it doesn't overshadow a good season for our under-23s. And obviously, they've had to make do with players progressing to the first team, such as Kellen and Ben, and obviously those who've been sent out on loan. I think the first game of the season we had Zach Bradshaw playing and Matt Boylan playing. There was a lot of players well known at the club that obviously no longer play for us and who've been sent out on loan or progressed to the first team. So they've had to adapt with different players over the week. So I think overall it's been a good season. I mean, they've won 10 out of 18. Obviously, last season they had Steve Harris as manager. They've had to adapt with that change as well. And we've seen new players play for the 23s this season. And yeah, it's been a year of change and I think they've adapted well.
Yeah, credit to Lucas Gatti and the young players there. Like you say, Josh, it's quite unique, isn't it, that they have to deal with players not being available for so many different reasons. And a lot of those, let's be honest, are good reasons, for the players' development, being called into the first team and going out on loan to experience men's football. But, yeah, to get that return with coming up against those issues, credit to Lucas and the management team of the under-23s.
What a guy Lucas is, by the way.
We've got to get him on here at some
what
point.
What a character.
We've got He's to get brilliant. Him on here at some point. He is fantastic. He's brought a bit of Argentine flair to the Bromley under-23s. He is fantastic, and what a character he is as well.
Is.
Moving on then to first team matters, and of course, it's no secret, the big game tomorrow at home to Wrexham is sold out. There we go. No tickets are available now, so please do not attend Hayes Lane if you do not have your ticket. What an atmosphere it's going to be tomorrow, Josh. We're in for a treat in terms of game of football, I think.
Yeah, I think if the Notts County game's anything to go by, I think we've got the ability to match those at the top. So, yeah, I'm looking forward to it.
It should be a really good game. And as Harry Forster will allude to in his interview a bit later, we seem to step up against the so-called bigger teams and the top teams in this division. Let's not take anything away from Wrexham. They've had a phenomenal season so far. They're currently unbeaten in 25 games, which is quite an incredible stat at National League, at any level of football, actually. We're very much looking forward to welcoming them back to Hayes Lane tomorrow. And, of course, for a lot of Bromley supporters, we talk about Wembley, but what we haven't talked about yet is the fact that Wrexham were Bromley's first ever Step 1, or National League, if you prefer, opponents. And it was here at Hayes Lane. You've done a little bit of a flashback to that on the socials this week, haven't you?
Yeah, I did.
It's a bit of a trip down memory lane, that one. I remember the day. A 3-1 victory for Bromley, despite going a goal down. It was a really, really good day. And certainly one that will live long in the memory in terms of an introduction to the National League. But really very much looking forward to it, Josh, as I'm sure you are as well. And someone else who's looking forward to it is Harry Forster.
It's been a while since we've been in action. How are you feeling?
Yeah, no, feeling really good. Body's feeling good. That's the main thing. And, you know, really, really looking forward to tomorrow against Wrexham.
So rewind to 2020. That's when you first came to the club. How are you finding life overall at Hayes Lane?
I mean, things have changed a lot since I first came to the club. Definitely for the better. I think everyone can see from the inside and out how the club's trajectory and is something everyone here at Hayes Lane is so excited about.
And you started your career at Watford. How was that for you?
Yeah, no, it was brilliant. It was like the closest professional team to where I live. What's going on down there, Josh?
Just a bit of background music there, Harry, don't worry.
Oh, this is a car crash, isn't it? Right.
We carry on.
Yeah, so Watford was like the professional club on my doorstep, really. Got picked up by them. Had a great few years down there, and the transition into Bromley was a smooth one, and one which I was really excited about.
So yeah, you initially joined here on loan and then picked up a hamstring injury, which kept you out for a while, but you sort of made a quick return. I think people were sort of expecting the length of your injury spell to be longer. But as a player, what is the key to a quick return from an injury?
I think the main thing is just the mental side of it. It was a pretty bad one, which I suffered, but I did recover really quickly. And the main thing was just getting my mind around it. And you know, my family were brilliant. They were really supportive and kept my emotions high. And you know, that allowed me to go into training every single day, expecting to get all my work done and doing it. And luckily I made a really quick return.
And in that first season, we finished in the playoffs. Obviously, it wasn't the outcome that we would have wanted. But how was that to experience?
It was brilliant. It was so good. Coming off that COVID year as well, I think that match against Hartlepool, I think it was maybe the second game back we had fans, and their place was bouncing. Even though it was opposition fans, it was brilliant to experience. And, you know, it unfortunately, it didn't pan out the way we wanted it to, but it was the highest finish, I think, in the club's history. And that was something to be definitely proud of.
They say never fall in love with a lone player. Well, even though it was COVID times, you became a fan's favourite. Everyone was watching on the streams. You're an entertaining player. You then penned a permanent deal here. How would you describe your relationship with the fans who a lot of them idolise you?
Yeah, no, it's brilliant. I do get a lot of love from the fans. I think all the players do. The fans here are brilliant. And, you know, it just spurs you on every Saturday and Tuesday to just go that extra mile for them. You know, they've been unbelievable with me, and I hope to repay their faith.
And when that loan spell came to an end, was it always Bromley you were going to stay at? What made you stay here? I know there are other clubs that were interested in your services.
Bromley was always my first thought. The way, as soon as I came here, the way I was welcomed, obviously the relationship with the fans, with the manager, with the other players, was definitely at the forefront of my mind to stay here, for sure.
And obviously, you talk about the playoffs in that season, your first season here. Obviously, then the FA Trophy came along last year. You played a huge part in the run-up to that, and of course, the victory itself in the final. How would you sum up that trophy campaign?
It's pretty difficult, Matt. That was definitely, in my football career anyway, the best feeling anyone can ever get. Playing at Wembley, it's everybody's dream. Lifting a cup at Wembley, going up the famous steps that every other, you know, brilliant player in the past has gone up and lifting the trophy. It was unbelievable. I think every player will be, you know, struggle to give you an exact answer for the emotions for that one. But yeah, it was just an unbelievable day for the family, for me, for everyone.
And of course, you've written your name in Bromley history, in effect, as has every member of that team on the day.
Exactly. That's something, you know, that no one can ever take away from you, take away from any of the players, and something that I'm extremely, extremely proud of, for sure.
You mentioned family there. Your family are brilliant at coming down and supporting you. Your mum, your grandmother, your brothers. Everyone comes down to watch you. It must be really nice to have that level of support. They're very committed to getting behind you and supporting you.
Exactly. Everyone, all my family, all my friends, they all love it. I've got so many people. I think the captain, I think Webbo gets a bit annoyed sometimes, the amount of tickets I'm always asking for. But, you know, they're so good in supporting me, and I appreciate it so much.
How would you sum up the season so far, both as a team and as on a personal level?
On a personal level first, I think the main thing for me was to stay injury free this season. Where, you know, the past couple of years I've had several knocks which have put me back a bit, but, you know, touch wood, on the injury front, I've pretty much been available for every single match, and I'm feeling good. My body's feeling good, so that was the main thing for me, which I'm really happy about. And as a team, I think we have slightly underperformed so far this season, but I think it will be a real, real good push, which we're all looking forward to now to get to the playoffs, and that's definitely the aim.
Big few games coming up, aren't there, to be able to push into those playoffs, and that all starts with the visit of Wrexham tomorrow. We've just been talking about that Wembley final. It's sure to be a good game, isn't it? I'm sure you're looking forward to it.
Yeah, it's one of the games which all the boys are always looking forward to. You know, the big games where it's going to be a lot of fans here. The place will be bouncing, which we'll definitely need them tomorrow. And of course, they'll show up in numbers, which they always do. But yeah, I think we probably are. We like playing against the bigger sides. I think sometimes we struggle against the teams where on paper we maybe some people think we should beat. But these are the ones that we're really up for, and we really want to get 3 points.
We've talked about you being a fan's favourite already. There are going to be a lot of fans here tomorrow. What's your message to all of those that are coming down?
Do what they always do on a Saturday, on a Tuesday. The amount of noise they make, it's what us, all of us players, it's what we all get our extra oomph from on a match day. And, you know, definitely be needed tomorrow. And I'm sure they're going to give it to us as always.
Well, Harry, it's always brilliant to catch up with you. Thank you so much for your time, and best of luck for the game.
Thank you very much.
Great to hear from Harry there. He's one of the many players here that just... he's just so happy to be here.
He loves it.
He does.
He loves it. And it's brilliant. As we mentioned in the interview, it's great to see his family and how much they interact with it as well. I've met most of them. They're all fantastic people. And it's great, you know, that they're that dedicated to following Harry's career. And he's got a really bright future ahead of him. He's a very, very gifted player. And, yeah, I really enjoy watching Harry play. He's just one of those players, isn't he? There was a bit of an interruption in that interview. For those that don't know, Josh has been really practicing playing the walkout music for when the players come out of the tunnel onto the pitch at Hayes Lane, and he's been practicing so much he just can't stop himself. And you could have been there by Graham Martin, and Dog Stand was ringing out during that interview a bit unexpectedly, but you know, that's what happens, right?
Well,
Josh is getting his practice in for tomorrow.
I mean, I just want to give myself more editing work, I think, Matt.
It's absolutely brilliant, isn't it?
And plus, I really like the song.
It is a great song, and I'm so glad it's what the players walk out to.
And it's our intro.
It is our intro.
Which is the real reason why we interrupted Harry's interview.
The real reason is that you're practicing, but anyway.
I just like the song.
We caught up with Andy Woodman as well, didn't we? After a break from the podcast last week, Andy rejoined us on this episode to talk about the week gone by and look ahead to that fixture with Wrexham.
Seems like a long time ago since we played York. How are you and the lads feeling?
Yeah, really good. It does seem like a long time ago. Probably seemed a lot longer on the night, to be honest. But yeah, we're in a good place. You know, I know that night was disappointing because, let's be honest, they were there for the taking, and we was trying to get to half time just to change the shape and tinker a few bits and bobs, and then possibly the worst outcome that could have happened to us happened. Your goalkeeper gets stranded by a back pass and caught out, and we get sent off. So. Yeah, that was somewhat frustrating, and possibly the worst position on that particular night that we could have had go against us.
And obviously, moving on to Tuesday night, we were meant to be heading to Halifax, but we didn't, obviously, because of the postponement. How has that affected the camp?
I think we've just got used to it, to be honest, and particularly Halifax. I think there's only got to be a drizzle there and it's called off. The lads are resilient. I mean, we're going to have to play it at some point. So, I think the guys have just got used to this part and parcel of this league, unfortunately. And not, equally, I'm getting used to that a little bit because you do all your planning and your prepping. And then the game's pulled and you have to suddenly switch to the next game without that game being played out. But no, lads are good. Just give us a chance to get one or two back on the grass. One that you know about that I got a lot of criticism about. You know, why is he not a keeper on a bench? How stupid and all that, you know. Our keeper had broke his finger the day before, Sam Long, so we had a bit of bad luck there. That said, I don't always have a keeper on the bench because it gives us a little bit of a gamble of maybe having an extra player that could affect the game up the pitch. It's one of those, isn't it? But I think there's a little lesson there learnt as well at this stage of the season.
And we move straight on to Wrexham tomorrow. We had Notts County a couple of weeks ago and we matched them for the majority of the game. Are you confident going into tomorrow's game?
I think I'm confident going into every game with this group of players. You know, we have got a group of players that, you know, really do turn up most games. I think we can safely say that. Results sometimes haven't gone for us, but you could never question that they don't turn up and have a go and give a best account of themselves as they can. You know, we've played all the top teams and we the margins are fine. We've been unlucky down at Wrexham, I'd argue, not to have come away with something. And then Notts County at home, I thought we was excellent for the game. Second half, you know, again, you hear them people, you know, why are you sitting back? We're not sitting back. We're not trying to sit back. But you're playing against a quality team that are pushing to try and get a goal. And it ends up forcing you back. And it's so difficult. And you see the quality of that pass and finish right at the end of the match. You know, that's what you're always nervous of right to the end. And they're a top team, and Wrexham will be the same. Wrexham are a good team. You know, we can't get away from that. They've not lost in 25 games. So we're looking forward to it.
And it's a debut for Sam Long tomorrow. He's going to be chucked straight into it. What advice would you give him as a former goalkeeper?
I don't think Sam needs any advice, to be honest. He's, you know, for those that don't know Sam, he's been playing out in the League of Ireland last season on loan. And if anyone's worried about the physicality of the National League, well, go out and see the League of Ireland. That is physical. So he had a loan spell out there. I went and watched him a couple of times out in Ireland. He's very highly regarded with Lincoln and Murmurs of England. So I've got no problem with Sam. Like anyone that makes their debut, you know, any position, I really hope for them it goes well, you know, because it can sort of kickstart them in not only their careers here at Bromley or their loan spells at Bromley, but their careers. I mean, look, let's talk about Ellery and Ali. I mean, Ali's 6-6 and he started here and it kick-started him. Ellery, he come here and he's, you know, gone on to loan at Bristol and that's kind of where it's a little bit different for me with the loans. I want them to kick-start themselves and then go and watch them flourish at higher leagues, hopefully.
It's a sellout crowd tomorrow for the visit of Wrexham, and that must be something yourself and the players are really looking forward to performing in front of.
Yeah, listen, there's one thing I pride myself on, is I like to sort of be a part of history wherever I do or wherever I go, as a coach, as a player, and now as a manager. And you know, we won the cup, which was nice, and we took this club to their highest position in the playoffs, which has been brilliant, and now, at the moment, this would be another little slice. I think that's is that a record crowd?
Modern day, yeah.
A modern day record crowd. What does that mean exactly, modern day?
In the past few years, I think.
So we're part of modern day history.
If you look back, you know, there's been games here in the 30s and the 40s and 50s that have had quite a bit more. But as a, you know, certainly as a National League and Conference South record for a game.
No, listen, I think it's a brilliant achievement. And, you know, I think let's sort of really put it in perspective of how far the football club's come. I know there's been echoes of, you know, some people a bit disappointed with this and that and that. You're never going to keep everyone happy. But I think you've got to embrace the situation that we're going to have a sellout crowd at this club. And I don't think, I think everyone should be really proud of that. You know, this club's come a long, long way in the short time I've been here. You know, I think when I first come here, our crowds were not very big and our ground was being developed and there was, you know, things I have changed and my staff have changed along with the chairman and the and everyone else. And I think we should embrace that this club's, you know, on the forward foot a little bit and we want to, you know, wouldn't it be nice to every week saying that we're sold out again this week with our own fans, you know, that would be, I think that would be the sort of longer, bigger picture. What I would ask is, you know, of all those fans that are coming tomorrow that are not Wrexham fans, it'd be great if they started, you know, really buying into this football club and us as a team and the quality of football. You know, the quality of football is good.
You raised a good point there. When you first came in, it was COVID times. There were no people in the crowd.
So there you go. I've upped the crowds already.
It's the Woody effect, is it? But in all seriousness, it's gone from one extreme to the other. And it is clear how much we've come along during that time.
Unbelievable. I mean, you're right to bring up the COVID. I actually forgot about that until we were speaking about it earlier, funny enough. You know, there's a lot of things that have progressed at this football club and people don't always like change. You know, they like it how it used to be. But we have to embrace change because every change I see here, you know, and what I see from this side of the fence, you know, and I know people have maybe not believe what I'm saying, but it's for the good of the football club. Everything that's being done is for the good of the football club to make it better and make it, you know, more sustainable and you know, it's not a bottomless pit. We've got to make sure we generate money for me, for the team, you know, so we can compete with the Wrexhams who get, I would say, probably, 9,000 every game? You know, we compete with them on the pitch tomorrow, but let's be honest, on scale and size of club and history of club and crowd, you know, we shouldn't be competing at all, should we? Let's be honest, but we will do. And that's where we've got to sort of, whether we like it or not, that's how we've got to evolve as a football club and a fan base. You know, I think we are, by the way, you know, not just on tomorrow. I think we've seen those little group of guys behind the goal that make a lot of noise and bring a bit of atmosphere. And I think we are evolving. I think we're probably evolving a lot quicker than we probably give ourselves credit for.
And we haven't caught up with you since two big bits of news, and that is the renewal of contracts for Jude Arthurs and Byron Webster.
Absolutely, yeah. I mean, I've said it all along, you know, Byron Webster is a fantastic captain on and off the pitch. He's a fantastic professional, and look, let's not overlook, he's been a brilliant player for us. People might say, you know, he's out of an age. Well, look, he's played pretty much near enough every game this season until late. So no problems with Byron. I'm delighted he's staying. It wasn't something I'd even not considered because I think what he does to the whole group is very hard to replicate and replace. And Jude, I look as one of our own, really. I mean, Jude's come here. When I come here, I think he was a young kid coming through this academy system here with Liam Vincent at the time. And I put Jude in and I've had nothing but praise for Jude. You know, he sort of replicates the DNA of what we are here as a football club. Hard graft and hard working and honest and tenacious. And is Jude the finished article? Well, no, but he's working every day to be a better player and a better version of himself. And so I'm delighted we've got another few years with Jude to sort of progress him. That said, I don't think you'll find many 21-year-olds that have played 80, 90 games in the National League. So maybe I've been a little harsh on Jude, but there's a lot more to come from Jude, and I'm delighted he trusted in what I was telling him and trusted in, like, where I see the vision for Jude going forward with the work that he's got to put in.
Both at different stages of their careers, and both players here, when you came in, you've had a good couple of years to work with them. They both seem to be really enjoying working with yourself and your management team.
Yeah, that's very nice of you to say. People don't always see the smiley me and the happy me, because sometimes I am a little bit gutted we've lost or not got the result or I'm deep in fault. But you've got to realise, like, I've been in this business 37 years and I've been coaching and managing now here, but coaching at the highest level for best part of 16, 17 of those years, you know. And I try and treat people like I'd like my son to be treated. I always come back to my son in this. You know, he's a professional footballer. And me have many chats, me and him. And he tells me the good and the bad, what other managers do and how he sees it as a player's point of view. So I try to be myself. I try to replicate some things that I think, would a young player relate to that? Or they think, nah, it's ridiculous. I try to do that. And equally, I try to be like a father figure to them and try to give them some guidance. Because I want these boys to have fantastic careers, whether it's here at this level, whether it's the level above or higher, or whether they go a level below. I want them all to have fantastic careers because we've all got one thing in common, that we love this game of football. So that's kind of you to say, and I feel that with the team. I think we see that with the team. We've got a team that goes out every game, and I know they're trying their hardest for me. And sometimes my emotions and disappointment, when I've done many an interview with you, Matt, it actually isn't for me. It's for those boys. They're so honest. They give me everything every day. Hence why we're probably up there amongst it and, fighting some big teams.
And you go back to the DNA and what you want to see in your team. One thing is very clear. We haven't got one of the biggest squads in the National League, but it's one of the most tight-knit squads for sure.
Yes. We've got a really good team spirit. I think everywhere I've been that's been successful, and there's been a lot of places I've been that have been successful, it's been team spirit. I mean, that's massive. And you need a group of players that gel with each other and honest with each other in good and bad, that can have a row in the dressing room, on the training pitch, and it's not carried over. So that's very important. And the other thing, I want to mention, I don't think there's many teams in the National League that have played as many academy graduates as we've played. And I keep going on to that. I'm kind of proud of that. I'm proud of our academy. I'm proud of the work those people are doing there. They don't get enough recognition sometimes from me. And the players they've given us. And I think as a football club, I've got to get the balance of getting results and getting us right up there as high as we can. And equally making sure that, we've got an academy here and we're facilitating it to get these boys in the team, to get them careers. And I think, this year, Kellum and Ben Crowhouse have come through and there's more sort of stacked up. So I'm proud of that. And I don't see another team in this league doing that. So that's something that I don't take lightly.
Well, brilliant opportunities being given to the young players here, that's for sure. Finally, we get back on to tomorrow. All tickets are sold out. No more tickets available. What's your message to the fans coming down to back the boys?
Well, my message is, first and foremost, have a great day. Because, if you've been here before, you haven't, it's your first time. Come and have a great day. And hopefully we put on a performance that you're proud of and you want to come back again and watch. Just shout and cheer for us all the way through, because it does get us across the line sometimes. I think we've seen that with our group of fans, many games. They've just sort of galvanised us to get across the line, and we need them. And we want them to be a part of us, because, we're not a Premiership club. We're not detached from the fans, as much as people feel. We want to be a part of the fans. Just keep encouraging these boys, because they're young boys that are trying everything they can to get a result. Against a team that's very good, by the way. But that said, we'll be going to win tomorrow. I must make that really clear. We won't be coming here just to make up the numbers. We done that at Wembley, went there with a game plan and how to get a result. And I don't want to go harping back onto Wembley. But we give a good account of ourselves there. We give a good account of ourselves at Wrexham. And we'll give a good account of ourselves tomorrow. We'll be trying to win this game because... as much as Wrexham want to get out of this league, we want to try and get those playoffs.
And it's always great catching up with you. Thanks for your time, and we'll catch up after the match.
Thanks as always. Thank you.
Brilliant to hear from Andy, as always, and get his pre-match thoughts and everything that's been going on in and around the first team in the past week. Now, moving on to our final guest, or guests, I should say, of Ravens Weekly this week. We had a very surprise visit, didn't we, Josh, from SE Dons? I will say it's a bit of an impromptu one, but I think quite often those are the best ones, aren't they?
Yeah, completely agree, Matt.
This was no exception, I think, as we welcomed Big G and Donny from SE Dons to talk about their link with Bromley Football Club and their memories of being Big here G. over the years. It was brilliant to have them in the room.
You're on nickname terms with them now.
I am on nickname terms. What was my nickname again? Was
Halsey.
Halsey. That's it. That's what you call me, isn't it? I suggested Hawley, but Halsey is the one, apparently. So
I think the S just gives it a bit more.
A bit more. Yeah, I do like it. I'm starting to like it.
If anyone sees Matt at the game tomorrow, just call him Halsey.
A lot of people will see me and you as well, Josh, rushing around, trying to get everything done. And yeah.
Anyway.
Moving on, let's hear from Big G and Donny themselves as they sat down with us earlier today to have a little chat, as mentioned, about the link between them and Bromley Football Club and their visit here today. We've got a special surprise for everyone on Ravens Weekly this week. We're honoured to be joined by two members of SE Dons, and that is Donny and George. Big G, guys, how are you doing?
Good, thank you, brother. Really good, man. Really happy to be here. So we're just as honoured as you are.
Yeah, thanks for having us.
It's an absolute pleasure, guys. And it's a bit impromptu, but I think sometimes that's how the best ones come about, isn't it?
We had to meet up with Ammo and he sort of pushed us into this room. I saw a few mics on the table and he said, put that on your headphone, and here we are.
And he just shut the door and left, didn't he?
Shut the door and left, yeah. So, yeah. Let's see how this one goes.
Well, it's brilliant to see you guys here. And I know you've both been here over the past few years on a number of occasions, and we'll talk about that more in a minute. But I believe you've had a little look around today. And it's fair to say, I think you both know the club has changed quite a lot in the past few years.
Yeah, honestly, I was blown away. Literally, I was saying to Ammo, this is absolutely amazing. Like Andy Ansar, who's like our mentor and chairman at SE Dons, he's been here and he's always told us, look, boys, you've got to head down to Bromley. What Ammo's doing down there and what's going on is massive. But I didn't realise it was so the infrastructure that you had here. It's absolutely amazing. All the academies, teams, you've got the college programme you're providing. We just walked around some of the classrooms. It's amazing. It's absolutely amazing. So yeah, it's really impressive.
Well, luckily for me, I managed to actually come while it was still in the construction stage. So to come from seeing it, where it was just literally raw and uncut, to now is just, it's amazing the job that you've done. And for me, I've had the opportunity of going into professional football clubs with Donny and the rest of the Dons, where we've done projects with Puma, like Know Your Club. And the structure here is of a football league standard. So I can only hope that in the years to come that Bromley makes that next step up.
And you guys have actually played some fixtures here as well, haven't you? Which is the crowds that come to watch you is absolutely phenomenal. And yeah, it's a great link between the two clubs, isn't it?
Yeah, we've had some amazing times here. We won our first, well, not our first one. Oh, Big G just walked on the floor and banged his head.
Siri there as well.
Yeah, now we've had some amazing experiences here. We had a cup final here, which done 3,500, or just under 3,500, I think. And that was when the half of the stand was closed. So, yeah, we've had some big games here. We won in the Nationals earlier on in the season here, which we're now in the semi-finals. We play that next Sunday at Northampton Towns Ground. This is our local club as well. We're from Lewisham, Bromley. It's all the same kind of thing, really. Our school went Bonus Pastor, which is like Downham, Bromley area. So we're from here as well. George went Bromley College. So again, this is our local club. So to see a local club as local as Bromley doing this is very inspirational.
George, I'll go back a few years. I remember you playing in a pre-season friendly for Bromley, actually.
Yeah.
Do you remember that one?
Yeah,
Glebe away?
Right. Yeah. I believe that was again. Was it Glebe?
Yes.
It was Glebe, they put the ball into the box and I put the centre forward on his arse. Simple as that. And nothing's ever changed. So like Andrew said, I went Bromley College. So to see Norman Park, we used to play our games there. And to see from now this side of it, where you can see like the work that's been done in the area, and I understand that there's development plans going to happen, I can only imagine where this club's going to go, you know. And this is a relationship that we want to maintain. And the people behind the scenes, we've just met the owner for the first time. He's kind of heard about us and seen us on YouTube, like his boys and stuff. But the rapport seems authentic. And that's what most of the business that we've always done has been face-to-face and based on the way we carry ourselves. So
I want to say as well, I think that's quite a credit to Bromley and what you guys are doing here. Clubs like us, SE Dons, and grassroots clubs in general, like Sunday League football teams, we need help and we need the support of the bigger clubs who have pitches available, who have these kind of facilities available. And Bromley have always shown us so much love, always. You know, if we need a pitch, look, they try and bend things to help things for us. They've always been so helpful. And that's a credit to Bromley, because it's important that, you know, clubs of your stature are helping the grassroots clubs, and you guys have been doing that, you know. So it's a, as George said, it's a relationship that we hope can continue, and it's based on just a gentleman's handshake and treating each other with respect, and that's all it's down to.
And you guys have got an absolutely incredible following. You've got a great level of support. You talk about the support in the games that you've had here. What does that mean to you?
I think it's amazing, because we just try to authentically be ourselves. So to know that our message is connecting with an audience who would then come down and physically support us, it means a lot, because, you know, it's just something positive in our community, and it's showing the kids that, you know, if you learn a skill set such as editing or getting a group of friends together to do something positive as opposed to just being out there doing nothing or messing around, you can create something like this. So every time people come and support us, we don't really call them fans, we call them supporters, call them family. It's just amazing. It's really great. And even just sitting here in Bromley, like, being recognised, as you said, that the owner's heard of us. It's like, wow, you know? So, yeah.
For me, it's the mentality shift, and a lot of people... nowadays, the influences that you get aren't encouraging you to be leaders or be masculine almost, you know. And I feel like we're very boisterous, but we're respectful in terms of it's all for the bigger picture. And the bigger picture is going past that classroom and hearing a few of them saying, Lefty's not as good as Dino, or RP7's the best player at the Dons, or have you heard that team talk? The influence that we're putting on these young men is a positive one, to always give their best and not settle for the standard that they are. And that's why the Dons has always been able to get to that next step, because you can see that the people behind it are always pushing to that next level, which is what this club is doing. And that's why we're all able to kind of relate. And for me, one of the most amazing moments already just being here today is looking out to that Bromley pitch and thinking, we'll be back here. We're going to be back here. And the reason why I'm saying that is SE Dons is committed to the Corporate Cup, and we're coming here to win. So I'm opened the invitation, said, boys, there's a competition on. Do you fancy it? And we said, why not? Yeah. Let's put our names in a hat and come and take that cup.
Yeah, he's like, come and have some fun. We're coming here to win.
Coming here to win, that's it. To win. And nothing but.
So, yeah, we'll be there at the Corporate Cup. It's on April the 2nd, is it? April the 2nd, yeah. So we're going to be there. We'll be here to win.
It's brilliant, absolutely brilliant, guys. And you talk about the similarities between the two clubs there. Something that really strikes me, having seen your content and having spoken to you guys, is the power of football to do good in the community. And that is an area where the clubs are really very much aligned, aren't they?
100%, 100%. I mean, just for ourselves, we play against teams from Peckham, Brixton, Catford, all over the place, where previously there's been trouble between people from them areas. And we're bringing out crowds of 600 to 700 at times.
No security.
No security. Everyone's on the sideline, foot on the pitch almost, you know what I mean? And there's never been any problems. The worst you ever get is a little push and a shove. But it's just, that's just because everyone's, it's a big game. And we're just trying to put the message, it's okay to want to win. It's okay to if you're playing Sunday League football or five-a-side football or wherever you play football, whatever level you're playing at, it's okay to support your club and want the best and try to achieve. And Bromley is a perfect example of our message. Bromley could just be, oh, no, we're just Bromley. No, it's okay to... This we're saying to Ammo, the facility and the structure you have here is higher of that of a club at the level you're playing at the moment, because it's okay to want to be something which is fantastic. And this is amazing. It genuinely is. It's the first time I've seen it. I know G's been in amongst it. But it's just, I'm quite blown away by it. Just the fact you've even walked in here, you've got a podcast room set up. It shows a school program. It's something I want to be around. It's an inspiration. I can come away from today feeling inspired that my local club are pushing themselves to be something great. So how I translate that in my head is, what am I doing to be great for myself or for my team? So yeah, I'm just happy to be in partnership with Bromley.
It really seems like everyone on your team and around your club has time for everyone. George, I remember you here a couple of years ago doing some filming down at the other end of the stadium. We had a half-term soccer camp going on. And you flooded with kids coming around to speak to you and meet you.
Yeah, yeah.
Do you know what, yeah?
That was when we done the, remember the little penalty thing I done.
Oh, okay.
It was handed out the boots.
You guys were heroes that day. Yeah.
Random boot drops. So We had to give out little clues to our supporters through Instagram of our secret location. And the location why it meant so much to us here was because we won the Paul Picard Cup final here, but we gave out little clues so that the first set of, I think it was like 50 fans, would all get a free pair of boots. But at the time, we had your half-term camp. So me and Inma, we've been working with kids from, we had a company, Kick Up Sports, previously before we got so busy with the Dons, where we was working in the schools. And we've always been great. Like, yeah. We used to run at half-term camps.
After school clubs.
Breakfast club, lunch club, yeah. PPA. We've done it all. So kids can always, I think kids can always tell when you're genuine. They know who's there. Like, you're the real deal, you lot. And me and him were going back and forth. He's doing like a Jorginho penalty from the halfway line doing zigzags. And the kids are like, ooh, but they wanted me to win. So he's telling me, so he's like, George, I promise you, I'm going to your left here. And I was like, all right, cool, I'll wait. He bloody puts it to the right. I'm like, this guy, man. Like, I couldn't hold him to it. But the kids are a massive part of what we're doing, purely for the fact that they, nowadays, they spend so much time away from home that the environments they're in, whether they're in school, whether they're after school clubs, their football clubs, their coaches are now their role models. And they're the ones who give them like the basics of how to carry themselves, their manners and their discipline. So when people... kids meet us and they see us on a YouTube, they see us on a TV. If we've got the humbleness to put that to the side and go like, what's your name? What's your favourite team? Why don't you support the Dons? Do you know what I mean? Or you support the Dons. Who's your favourite player? It builds that community. And that's why we're speaking about the relationships between the football clubs and the grassroots teams. We need each other. Because if you really want to build a community, it's about being in that position where you can help. And we're going to continue doing that. And we do that through the kids, the message that we put out. And again, I want to thank Bromley because I've done shoots here with like Bazingo, who's from the Sidemen. They're one of like the biggest YouTube people. And that was amazing to be able to bring people from outside to this environment. And they were like, wow. So since then, the club's just kept doing this. Just keeps on doing that. And we're going to keep doing that as well. And I hope that we can continue to grow together.
And you talk about working with the kids, guys, and I'm sure you know very well that 2 minutes that you spend with them, it can be life-changing, can't it?
Yeah, I think, you know, any opportunity to be a positive influence to children is something that we have to take advantage of, especially when they're throwing out words like, you know, influencers and all this stuff that they've labelled us now. We're just hoping to use our platform to influence kids. A positive influence for children is more powerful than people realise. So I think, as G said, it doesn't hurt us to take a minute out of our day to speak to some kids. What's your name? What's your dreams? What are you doing to work towards that? Are you enjoying yourself? You know, that it doesn't hurt. It doesn't hurt at all. And that's our good deed of the day. You know, so, yeah, any chance to hopefully use our platform for the good is important to us.
Just before I let you go, Bromley versus Wrexham in the National League tomorrow. I'm sure you're aware it's a sellout, big fixture.
I know the goalkeeper, Mark Howard. And I also know enough of the boys, Louis Dennis, and obviously Huston Physio down here. So yeah, it's going to be a tough game.
It is going to be a tough game. I was just going to ask you actually if you can give a little score prediction.
Where is it being played?
It's here. It's here. A sellout crowd, Hayes Lane. Yep.
Ooh. I'm going to go 2-1 to Bromley.
2-1 Bromley. Mm. Love that. I'm Big G.
5-4.
5-4 to who? Or are you just going with no, Bromley? No, love it.
The reason why I say
sorry, that, Mark. Yeah.
because I can see it being one of it. You know who owns their club as well?
Yes. Yeah.
Right, is it Ryan Reynolds?
Ryan Reynolds and Rob McElhaney,
yeah. He loves a blockbuster and everything that's happened in the FA Cup. I'm hoping that they turn up here a little bit kind of like, oh, it's Bromley. You know, like, and then they let one goal goes in. It's just a back and forth. But a last minute winner would be amazing, especially for the home support.
Oh, it would be. Guys, an impromptu interview, but it's been amazing having you on here, and thank you so much for your time.
Thank you very much, brother.
Anything for the dogs?
Where's them hot dogs at?
Yeah, man. I'm going to promise there's some burgers. Yeah.
As mentioned there by Donnie and Big G, they are taking part in the club's corporate tournament, and you can find out more about that online at bromleyfc.co.uk. It's sure to be a brilliant tournament, and I'm really looking forward to seeing who comes out on top. But beware, SC Dons are coming here to win. They made that very, very clear. A couple of things before we leave you from this episode. We're having St. Patrick's Day celebrations in Broomfields this afternoon and evening. So if you are at a loose end, pop down and join in the fun. It's
looks, well, it's very much a party atmosphere down there, isn't it, at the minute? You and me are up here, but it's, yeah, certainly people enjoying themselves down there, very much a party atmosphere. Broomfield is also hosting a Community Trust quiz night on the 30th of March, and this will continue on the last Thursday of every month, so we'd love you to come along and join us for that. Again, more information on the club website, and you can book your place for that. It's £5 per person, or £30 for a team of six.
We also have some player news to bring you on this Friday evening, and that is Marcus Sablier has headed out on loan again. He's joined Cray Wanderers until the end of the season. This is Marcus's third loan spell. He was at Hampton and Richmond, and also Bowers and Pitsy. So he will be spending the remainder of the season at Cray.
I was just going to say, he actually impressed against Cray Wanderers, playing for Bowers and Pitsy last week, and Neil Smith, a manager who knows him very well, and best of luck to Marcus in his time at Cray Wanderers.
I mean, Kellen and Ben did well there, so...
That's right, hopefully. Absolutely. Yeah, it's looking good, but credit to Marcus for going out and having these loan spells and getting that first team football, and he'll certainly come back a better player for it. That's us now, isn't it, Josh? We are done for another week. It's been another bumper episode. Thank you to all of you who stuck with us all the way through and to the end. Thank you, Josh, for joining me as usual. Don't forget to get behind the team tomorrow. If you've got your ticket, we look forward to seeing you. Unfortunately, if you haven't got your ticket, it has now sold out. So please do not attend the Hayes Lane Stadium unless you have purchased a ticket. But for now, we'll be back next week on Ravens Weekly once more. We hope you've enjoyed this episode, and we look forward to seeing you again next week. Take care, everyone.
Come on, Robert.
The Champions League, you could have been, you could have been, you could have been. What's all this stuff you're giving us? There's just one team for me.